Hello, my name is Miriam van der Valk and I work at Philoprax. And about a year ago, I started to formulate some kind of venture in my philosophical practice. Somatic philosophy, the wisdom of the body, or the body as a path to wisdom, or the body as a language of wisdom, and how to learn how to speak it. I had read books like The Body Keeps the Score, by Bessel van der Kolk, and The Drama of the Gifted Child by Alice Miller, and Character Styles by Stephen Johnson. And I remember very clearly when I finally overcame my aversion to group workout and went to classes of yoga and Pilates at my gym. It's like meditation with the body, I thought. Why on earth have I put this off for so long? So, this is a recording of when I invited Patricia Vane, master student at the Högskolan för scen och musik here in Göteborg, over to my place for a session of body practices, whatever that is.
Shall I just... It's somehow always hard to begin somewhere, someone else.
Yeah.
Present yourself and where you're heading. Let's see what it is today.
Yeah. You don't have to do the template from your CV.
No. It's not. No, not like that.
You can never quite know how people will receive what you give them. Mm-hmm. When you like publish a text or you take a photo or even you never know what it'll remind people of, and how they might get upset because it looks like something that somebody said told them when they were 12, and you know, and this, you have absolutely no control over this, how people receive what you let out. And I think it's the same with making podcasts, like, and we still have to be in the world somehow.
Yeah, you know? Otherwise, you just have to raise yourself.
Yeah. Yes. Mm. And the option is not to hide.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah.
So you're Patricia, and you're here to do a master's degree at university for the music. What's it called? Högskolan för scen och musik.
Yes.
That one. Yeah. So part of what you do is a kind of mix between performance and workshop. How did it sort of begin? Did you start from how the body moves, or is it the essence of the body, or is it like your feeling of self, like your selfhood in your felt selfhood, or like, I'm just interested where did it start? How did you invite other people? I can understand that you would do a performance if you were in the Högskolan för scen och musik. But how did you start to invite other people?
Yes. Well, actually, it started with inviting other people and not with... No, that's not true. I started with the performance. Like, literally, the performance was the beginning of this work.
Ah.
Here in Gothenburg 4 years ago, because I was being asked here at Konstapemin to do a performance. Well, I never worked with performances before.
Mm-hmm.
And then my question for that time that I've been given to do a performance of some sort was like, how will my body react in a certain space and a certain time?
Mm.
And I was... being part of an international artist group at Konstapemin while having a residency for 8 months. And in that group, we worked with topics as discrimination, segregation, and society, fairness, and so on. That kind of topics. But the performance was not directly, or shouldn't, or wouldn't have to relate directly with the international group, but somehow because I was working in that scene or in that environment, I just wondered how, like, very purely, if I would listen to my body, what would it do? And I picked out a cave. It's called the Bergrummet. It's an exhibitionary space at Konstapemin.
Yeah.
So it's a dark, raw, not...
bit moist.
Yes, moist space. In January it was.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, but it wasn't the summer, right?
No, it was in January, the 13th of January.
Oh!
I'm 6'6", more bad. But anyways, it was snowing outside, it was really cold. And before that, I worked with textiles on the body.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, I worked with textiles and animation, which is moving puppets, moving characters. So I, in the residency, I knitted a lot, which felt very meditative.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about how we are relating as human beings with each other, which always has been fascinating me. And also the reasons why I am doing the things that I'm doing. So in the performance, I engaged my body and asked the body, who are you now? And then I started as a little ball and rolled up in 10 minutes, just standing, very basic, but very slow. And somehow that had such a profound effect on me.
Yeah. What was the effect? Where did you feel it, or did it come as thoughts, or?
It just, like, if you would analyze it logically afterwards, and I still am doing that for almost 5 years after that action, I realized that humbleness. To return to the body and ask the body what it wants. Like,
what it wants.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, what do you want to do right now if people are watching you?
Oh, did you not plan?
No, I didn't plan. Forgot to mention. I didn't plan.
Oh, you didn't even plan. So you
No, it was not. It was not like you make a choreography or a score. It was... I loosely thought of it, but I did it there.
Yeah.
Like standing in the corner with my face towards the wall and with my back towards the audience, where I knew the audience could be standing. And then I was rolling up very slowly in the cold. And
yeah, in the cold. Yeah. What part was the gaze of on your back, like the gaze of the audience? How did that play in, do you think, as compared to being alone?
It,
the gaze of the other.
Yes, it's, that's a very good question. I haven't formulated that about that performance. That's a very good question. I think I'm going to think about it.
Yeah, just knowing that you are seen. I mean, there's something very profound about that.
And that has, after that, when I went more into the somatic practices, because I met several people here in Gothenburg who are working with techniques to understand the body. And not understand on a logical level, but understand on a physical level.
Like to integrate or something.
Yes. Getting into these techniques as Feldenkrais and as Klein technique and more of those meditational techniques and improvisation techniques. And About the question, the gaze of the people, and when I'm doing a performance, because I don't, because in that setting it was a performance, but after that I'm not so interested in a performance. It is what then I am exploring my body and myself. If you do it alone, it reacts differently than if you would do it when people are watching you. And after, a year after then the first performance, I dig into deeper research on this specific topic of the behavioral motions of my body. And then I invited people in to watch me for the sake of the effect of me knowing that I'm being watched. And also going into a dance studio with the same questions, and then knowing that I'm going to, that I have decided to present something, and with that watching at the back, with that idea, that thought of how you are going to, after these 2 weeks, you're going to present something.
Yeah.
That also changes.
You know,
you are moving.
Yes. Yeah.
So all these decisions are part of the research rather than it is a artistic expression of aesthetics or result or as an art piece. It's not only that, then that the rest is marked as research, but not to be part of this entire world that for me is art and life interwoven.
Yeah. That
makes sense. But.
Yes, art and life interwoven. And the I like the idea of the before, during and after as all being part of the art. The whole life as art.
Yes. You know?
And the whole life, I like to think that what we need to do, like a big imperative in life, is to, whatever happens, continue gracefully. And this is kind of also it's the same idea as your whole life being art. So if there's a huge wave coming from here of, say, you know, the reading the news, could again feel like a, you know, so what you need to do is sort of continue gracefully through this, and not try and beat everything, not to try and like go through life as hard as possible, you know, and to gather things as strongly as possible, but to be to let because art is the interwovenness and the weaving of and also the, I'm just rambling a little bit here. But what was I thinking about the, about the inviting other people, because this is about moving, doing the same movement as someone else, like simultaneous moving, like you do in, for example, a class or something. Or do you do that in your workshop too? That's another very profound experience that you never get when you're on your own, when you're doing the same movement as someone else at the same time.
Yes.
Yeah, do you do that in your workshops? Or are you more sort of leading, telling people how to move?
I will tell you. Yes, I'm not, I'm not like you would picture in a yoga class or a dance class. That will be in front of the class.
Students
in front of the students, and they imitate what I'm doing.
It's not like that.
That is because I think I always felt a bit limited in actually feeling the knowledge of my body when I am imitating a teacher in, for example, dance class, because I'd done some modern dance classes just before I went to Sweden, first time, just before I got into this research. And also yoga, when you are looking at the teacher, although that's maybe a little bit more also the awareness about what you are feeling inside. But it's still a stepping into the form or shape, what you see in front of you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, in Feldenkrais, for example, you do not see a teacher doing anything at all as an example. He gives or she gives you instructions that you will execute in a way that you think you will receive them. So how to lift your arm to the right side is coming forth from how you have been lifting your arm and how you are processing that information at that moment. And that doesn't have to be how the teacher, if there's going to be a teacher, is having it in their minds. And that's also how I work when I do the laps, and I rather call them, but this is this, you know, this heaviness of words.
Words are extremely important.
Yes.
Yeah, find the right one.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I don't call it classes, because for me, classes that you have more of this hierarchy of a teacher who has the knowledge and the student who
is the receiver
of that knowledge. And if I call it lap or session, it feels like we're more on equal terms and I'm learning as much as the participants who are coming into the same space. Although I am the one who is creating the space or opening up a space, like, oh, come here 10 to 12 because I am interested in this. And if you are also, then you can join in that.
Yeah, you can still hold space, I mean, and be a learner in this situation of holding space.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. And so I've been doing it mainly with my voice. Giving invitations to feel certain things. But maybe feeling is also a bit of a strange word, but not to
experience?
Yes, experience, or what happens if you do that? And that there are different levels of feeling, thinking about how you feel something, but also feeling not related to the brain or that thinking mechanism. And
sensing, isn't it?
Yes, I think yes, that's the best, maybe that's the best word to use. Sensing, yes. I have been developing this sensing to make the layers more complex, or make or see that there are so many layers of sensing.
Yeah.
At the moment, you are kind of asking a question to the bodies. That's how I see it. And that you are answering.
Yes.
You answer immediately in your head, like, oh, so we're going to do that and that and that. Like a sort of planning imagination of what's going to happen, because that's, I think, what the brain does immediately.
It creates
something, and then you execute it towards that, or you execute it differently or not exactly the same, and then you reflect upon that again. So that's a bit, I think that's a bit the if you want to say method, that I like to, or a tool, I like now at the moment to put into those spaces of laboratory, physical, ontology. Nah, thanks.
Yeah. Yeah. When you're talking, I'm kind of seeing the self or the sense of self moving from this brain and the vat scenario to each cell by carefully moving first with you focus on your shoulder, you put yourself there and you move, you're sort of moving into your body. It's like we don't really, that's another interesting thing about the gaze of the other. When you, for instance, I had overheard some friends talking about going to the gym, and one of them said they hate going to the gym because of all the mirrors everywhere.
Mm.
You just feel fat or whatever.
Mm.
And then another one said, no, but it's very important to see if you're doing like a movement in a way that's going to hurt you. Like if you're running and you notice that your one of your feet is going like to the side, mm. you need the mirrors to be able to correct it.
Mm.
And this is the we don't have the gaze of the other. When you say the gaze of the other, it sounds like the societal shame gaze that tells you how that you have to fix something to in order to be okay to be part of society. But the paradoxical position, I love paradoxes. I love how things are both and-ness of life. So this gaze of the other is also telling you, informing you about your actual posture, and you know things that you don't know because you have these two eyes only, and they can't see your back, and they, you know, so that's what I was thinking when you were talking, and the moving the self into the body and inhabiting your cells, you know.
Yes. Yeah, and you go into that body in a certain pattern that you are familiar with.
Yeah.
And you can, I think that you can slightly move to another pattern on your own.
Yeah.
But as far, I mean, you can see just as far as you are known to see, unless environmental influences come to trigger you or come to
guide
them, yeah, give you more information, more like what do you say, like
context
to be able to go to another side.
Mm.
And that's, I think that's also very interesting to work on this level with the other, only than yourself. And then comes in your suggestion with the importance of mirrors or the importance of a teacher who is showing you to do. Yeah. Of course, that's
the super other person is your mirror.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. And then you can do it. And there's something that I find very, I don't want to judge it, but it's just something in that a classical teacher is showing in, for example, and I'm kind of been into the dance world quite a lot, although I'm not a dancer, but I'm working a lot with dancers.
Mm.
So then you have a dance teacher who is showing you how to perfectly stretch out your arm. And then you do the exactly the same, but somehow not taking it in account if your body is suitable to do the same as the other is doing.
Mm.
So then in the somatic practices, I think it shifts in that the teacher will be someone who guides you to stretch out your arm according to your skeleton and according to your...
Yeah.
modus of being.
This is a kind of radical subjectivity, mm-hmm. you know? And the purpose of the guide is a nice word. It's better mm-hmm. than teacher.
Yes.
Yeah. So that is why we're equal. I have the same way of talking about and thinking about my coaching practice, for instance, so, which is because it's not counseling or therapy, or it's not a patient and a doctor. It's not someone who tells you what you need. You need at least a year of therapy, like I was told once. I had a year of therapy too, so but never mind. Yeah, but you're never implying that the other one, that you have something that you can, you're the only one who can give it to the other person. It's not, that's not how it works at all. It's not the dynamic we are discussing, but you're growing, but everyone's growing.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I see another imperative here, and it's the being together. It's really not the solo warrior thing that's from last century. Mm. It's completely out now. Yeah.
Yes.
What would you suggest? Should we do something on the floor? Or
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something somatic.
Yeah. Maybe we can do.
I have a lot of toys on the floor. Yes. I can move them.
Oh, it's fine with the doors. You know,
what happens if you stand on?
You stand on that door. What if happens if you stand on that one? Well, it's actually good research.
It's easy for you to say, the guide. Should we? Is the yoga mat good, or is it just...
Yeah, well, it really also... I don't have a preset ideas for the labs that I do. It's also really about sensing the environment.
Yeah.
And the moment that I'm in. So it's not a strange idea what we just came up with.
Good.
Let's see. through what we've been discussing and what is present here.
Yes.
To see if we can go into a certain research that we both are going to enjoy. Because if I'm thinking about your radical subjectivity, that's how you call it, right?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. When I am with one person, then I really like to work, or it's very much going on if you work with, for example, you go down to the floor.
Yeah,
just go down to the floor and then get up again. Mm-hmm. And then the other one is observing how you are doing it and then telling what was happening.
Mm.
And then from that observation, you're doing it again.
Yeah.
Without saying like, oh, you should do it that way because then it's more profitable or effortless for your body, but it's the only observations of what my eyes are seeing when you are going down, which you cannot see of yourself.
Very, very interesting. I have been, I think, often and quite a lot about what we observe and how incredibly different the amount of data we can take in is. Especially like if I'm angry, I take in almost nothing, you know?
Yeah.
And this is why I really am working with my anger in this way, you know? I don't want to feel anger because I want to take in information.
Yeah,
you see what I mean?
Yes.
Yeah. So I'm very excited now to see what you see if I go down on the floor and get up again.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Why, oh God, I'm thinking so much about how to do this now. Yeah. I'll just tell you, I heard that it's a sign of youth if you can get up from the floor without using your hands. Yeah. So that's the only thing I'm thinking now is, will I be able to get down and up without using my hands?
Then it proves that I'm young.
Yes. Yeah. Or I'm, the image I have in my head is Heathrow Airport. 15 years ago, and there was this entire family from India in beautiful robes, and I saw this very old woman, like 150 years old, who was sitting with her knee under her chin, you know, like a super agile person. Uh-huh. Yeah, so she's the one I have in my head now,
yeah.
And also this try to be young.
Yes,
but okay, yes. I'll stop talking now. See, it's difficult to.
Mm-hmm.
Get out of the head and into the body.
Mm-hmm. Just take some time.
Mm. It's very difficult not to talk. I'm thinking, I'm having words and in my head all the time.
So, I will just describe what I saw.
Mm-hmm.
That you were first you have your feet close together, you still have them. And before you started, you were looking down.
Yes.
And then I think you raised your head again. And then the gaze went down, and you started to bend your pelvis as your entire spine went forward. And then you looked slightly up to me, I think. Yes.
Because I was going to use my hands.
Yes. Yeah. And then I think at that moment, sometimes it goes so fast, but at that moment, the knees came in, and then you decided to fall and to let the knees lead to the floor, and indeed with the support of the hands, because, yes, you did that. I think, not sure anymore, actually you have to do it again, is that I think first the knees came on the floor and then the hands, but I'm not sure anymore, because sometimes these things go so fast and I can't record with.
Mm.
I mind. And then you were, you kept on sitting on your knees, like, and your butt on your heels. As like, this is done, this is how far I can go to, this is my on the floor. This is my on the floor.
Yeah. Now on the floor?
Yes.
Yeah.
So your spine up. So there was a part of your body that was not touching the floor.
Yeah, a big part. Yes.
Quite a big part.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't even think about that. I was just, yeah, to me I was on the floor, but really I was only on the floor with my shins.
Yes.
Yeah. And the, yeah.
And
what does that mean?
Yeah, I don't know.
What do you think it means? What do you have?
I don't know. It's just how you now thought about.
Yeah.
This is me on the floor.
Yeah.
When I got the invitation to go on the floor.
Yes. When I get the invitation to go on the floor, I do this. I think I did my hands first. Because,
yes, true too.
Yeah.
Yes, now I see you doing it.
Yeah. And then like that. So I touched the floor with the sort of soles of my feet and hands.
Yes.
And now I'm just sitting with the shins and the top of the feet.
Yes, indeed. You also bend it forward, shifted your weight forward again to because first you were
feet.
On your toes, and then you reversed the exact same movement to go up again. It's like same, maybe slightly differences otherwise. I wonder what if it's really reversed. There is such something happening here around the pelvis. In order to be to come up, the energy must be going upwards instead of when you go down to the floor down, which makes your pelvis located somewhere else. But I can't really see it. Do you want to do it again?
Yeah. So this is the downward movement where the energy is in the hands.
Yes.
And now I'm leaving it. Mm-hmm. Now it's here.
Yes.
And again, just for support and the feet. And down. Now it's here.
Yeah.
Where it was not when I went down.
No, because then it's here.
Yeah. Or even
wait,
sort of
there. Yeah, do you think it's more, do you sense it's more here?
Yeah. I think I'm diving.
Yes. So you're actually, but you are...
I'm pulling my body down
by
my hands.
Huh. Would you want to do it again?
Yeah.
And then somewhat slower. Can you try to do it slower? So slow motion.
To look up. Yeah, I think I did this the first time too, that I when I stand up I put my heels a bit closer together. Yeah, it's from the Tant Ballet. Old ladies ballet class that I took a couple of years ago, that you can, if you put your toes out like that and you can sort of glue your legs together, it's like an incredible stability. Just from
engaging these leg muscles.
Did
you still feel that the initiation of going to the floor came from the lower part of the arm, or where do you start it? What is the begin point when you go down?
Maybe the chin. It starts quite high up, but it's a sort of wavy. It's a diving movement, still, and it's like a welcoming the floor. Like you also said, I look down and then I look up again. So it's seeing where I'm going, like a careful person does, you know, and then look up to also make sure that that I'm taking care of my spine. I don't want to do. I want to learn from the past. Like even from the image I have in my head now is a drawing from a book that shows how you should do your household work, like sewing and knitting and stuff. So there's a picture in a book I read, and it had a big cross. It's from the
1910s or something, very old. Had a big X over a picture of someone sitting like this in a chair. And it said, the correct way is like this.
Really?
Yeah, really. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, to protect your back.
Yes.
So I'm thinking that I also had that in mind. Like the hundreds of years of sore women's backs and not.
Yeah.
I have learned, you know.
So while you're doing this, you reference to these pictures of good posture.
Yes, and but more pictures of this is so interesting. Like all the meaning bearing symbolism in my mind that comes out now that I never, what an opportunity to reflect to just talk about this. Very simple movement. I just have to put that in. Yeah, but the story is not so much of a correct posture in a way. Well, technically it is, but that was sort of the name of the picture, correct posture. But for me, it's the story that I'm bringing is more learning from other people's mistakes. This is like a big mantra I have in my head. Learn from other people's mistakes so you don't have to make them all yourself, you know. Yeah, we make enough by ourselves anyway. Yeah.
So what you have been doing now, the way you now go down to the floor, is kind of, I'm putting this very it's not to avoid to make a mistake, to work with that avoidance of making a mistake.
Is it? Yeah, I think to not to do harm.
Yes.
Yeah.
To your own body.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, maybe you're right. It sounds very boring now that I put it like this, but I think it's true. The boring truth of how I do this exercise. It's not the same the way I would do stand on the cross trainer at the gym. I wouldn't do it with the specific aim of not doing harm. I would do it with the aim of tiring myself, you know, because tiring myself to break the muscles, because then I know that they grow if they break.
Yes.
You know, a little bit.
So there you don't
think
of whether you harm your body or not.
Nice. Interesting. Does it mean I'm slightly afraid of you? You know, that I'm not really sure of what will happen in this. But it's not, I'm the one doing all the movement. I wonder what it means. Yeah, maybe I don't trust myself when it comes to my body.
Well, I don't know. This is also something that I don't somehow, when in this case, I try not to, although it's very interesting to reflect on, but I'm not trying to work with what it means or what it should be or what it shouldn't be. It's just this entire what's coming up now from the deepest of you.
Yeah.
It's like, why on earth am I going down like that? And there's so much that is making me aware of why I'm doing a simple movement as this.
Yeah. I'm wondering if I'm judging. I don't think I'm judging. I think I'm also interested in even things like whether it means I'm afraid, you know. I don't think it's bad.
No, for instance. And it is judging what we do all the time.
Yeah, in a way, but just putting words to things is judging them.
Yeah, to give them a certain value.
Yeah, and a name.
Yeah.
Then you have already decided the identity of things. So you're like making yourself the master of your world by saying, everything, naming things. So it's always it's also a judgment.
Yes.
So that's all right.
Can I ask you to do it again. And then now notice, now really sensing where you, from what part, what specific part, and it can be very small, you go down. Like where in the body starts.
Where does it start?
Yes.
Ah,
so maybe you have to be even slower to detect that moment.
Yes. This will be interesting. Who is starting the movement?
Mm-hmm.
I haven't started yet. I think. I'm not sure. Like, have I?
Yeah,
I'm like, I could feel my, I'm like slightly wavy now in my posture. I don't know, is this unconsciously starting my movement down by Okay, so now I'm feeling it in the back of my neck. Movement starting in the back of my neck. Yeah, that makes sense, right? That could happen with the top of my spine.
Yes.
Yeah.
Let's go back and maybe try it again.
Yeah, now I'm feeling it all in the belly and also top half of the back and right up to the skull. And it's really, I can also feel it here. Now I can also feel it in my legs and in my feet, and the way my feet touch the ground, the yoga mat. Now, when I've bent 10 centimeters, I can feel it in my toes as well, how my toes are. But only now, like not before. Talk about body awareness. Man, how did I live before now? Completely oblivious to what's happening in my body. I mean, I can feel on my skin when I put my socks on, but you know, I seem to not be aware of anything else. Yeah. This is very interesting. I'm bending forward now again, and now I feel it in. Yeah, suddenly, at a specific point, it sort of starts happening in my glutes. Why is this so valuable? Why is it valuable to know what to feel your body?
From, if you would ask me,
yes,
for now it is that I'm aware of several options, or of like multiple options, possibilities to go into, which makes me not attached to one or only having one or two to choose from. And I think that kind of freedom of choice makes me more flexible, and not inflexible as in this
way
flexible, but flexible as in
open.
Yes. I don't even know what the result would that be, but I feel much more fluent to situations in life.
And also more, perhaps, partaking and... I'm thinking transcendent, immanent, I'm thinking God transcendent, God immanent, these two parts. are the same. Oh, I'm just having lots of very interesting thoughts now of the the rootlessness of us. It's so funny that we are not like plants stuck in the ground.
Mm.
It's very interesting and funny how we can survive without being stuck into the ground. that's the idea I'm having. Oh, it's so funny and interesting. We can live
yeah.
without roots.
Yes. Can we live without roots?
Yeah, I know. Probably not, eh? I mean, we can't live without roots. Nobody can live without roots. But where are the roots?
Yes.
You know? And this is a kind of, like, saying, here are the roots, right? Here are the points of the connecting points, you know? Here are my connecting points.
Mm.
Yeah, that's what it does, maybe.
Mm.
The body awareness. My connecting points. Yes.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's, yes. And if I do this, you could go on and on.
Yeah.
With giving suggestions, proposals of what if you now start dropping your hand, your
mm.
head.
Mm.
First of all. Like, not think of anything else except for making your head heavy. Let it fall towards the ground, towards the core of the earth. And then see how the rest of your body is organizing around it, for example.
Mm. How could it... I mean, it's all connected, I want to protest. I mean, how can I make my head heavy but the shoulders steady? I mean, that doesn't work, does it?
No.
I have to try
it twice.
Oh, I'm closing my eyes when I'm making my head heavy.
Yes,
yeah,
you
so
do?
Yeah. So my eyes are a part of my head in my mind. I just noticed it now. I'm not closing them anyway. Okay, that wasn't too hard. Is it heavy? The other day I was, I tried this Feldenkrais thing and the guide said, your face should melt.
Mm.
And I told myself during this half hour of like guided body meditation or whatever you would call it, I reminded myself so many times, I could feel my face just going focusing, like you're definitely not asleep, you know, like. I was tensing my muscles in my face even though I was lying on the floor with my eyes closed. So I told myself, melting. Yeah. Some people stop, can't relax anymore, so they don't sleep. They're always tense somewhere. Maybe that's another value to practice melting your face when you're awake.
Yes.
Yeah.
Be for sure. I'm also thinking about what you're saying now, melting the face, which is not, you cannot actually do that.
No.
But to use that as an imagery to give signals to the operating system,
yeah,
wherever that is, to fulfill that wish, but then in a because we are given, I think, well, at least I'm still giving myself tasks through words. So
yeah.
You have your association with words, and if you say relax, for everyone, it means something else. Relax the face, because everyone has different states of relaxation.
Mm.
For some, relaxing is maybe a little bit less than they already very very tensed or not relaxed.
Mm. Or smiling.
Or, yes.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
Because the words are so subjective to the emotions and the memories that come with it. But melting the face refers to something that is outside of, or still, of course, still melting is something today you have created from before about what melting is.
Mm.
But it seems to be a little bit more outside of the picture storage that you have.
Yeah, yeah.
That's connected.
But you said that you use language to give yourself instruction. Do you mean that you could use something else? I'm thinking images.
Yeah, yeah. Although that's also transferred through language, because how I think most of the time I hear a voice and I see pictures, but I hear a voice.
Yeah.
That is. That's firstly saying something, or maybe after. And there's also instructions that are coming from something else than that, but that is quite dominant.
Mm.
The.
That's very interesting, because I think I have fascinating. I think I have a very dominant, I have images as my dominant sort of motivation for change or something.
Yeah.
I have a very and images that are like in turn like felt images or something.
Yeah.
I can like very much see myself in a certain situation, or I can pretend that I'm doing something, and it's not with the words, and I know that it's not with words, because when the words come in, I have told myself in like reflecting after reflecting on it, so I've told myself that if there are too many words, it means I'm no longer in touch with the I'm in the ego realm of the argumentative mind,
mm-hmm.
that is trying to give too many reasons, it's putting things up in a for and against pile. And this is not to be trusted. That's like,
mm-hmm.
it's the ego realm,
yeah.
Don't trust it, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's nice. Huh. As I do recognize also very much that it comes in, that I also see images.
Mm.
But indeed that there is a argumentative voice
yeah.
over. And maybe through this work, I also consider it as important as the images, or as something that's felt, is just needed to kind of be said,
mm-hmm.
in order to communicate with others around me, because you cannot feel my and that's probably because we live in this society. I imagine if I would be living alone in the woods for my entire life, then
or if everyone was telepathic,
yes.
You know, we wouldn't need it.
Yes.
Yeah, but words are the function of words is both to sort of unlock some
mm-hmm.
things that they can do that. You know, words can really unlock
mm-hmm.
you, and also to record afterwards so that you can share.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. So we can't be without them. It's just. When I have these fights in my head, it's always extremely, it's so wordy,
mm-hmm.
and it's repetitive, it's going like so
yes.
It's definitely not to be trusted, this the wordiness. If it's like that, no,
it's like that.
Yeah,
don't go in.
You just take a deep breath and you say, right now I'm in that phase,
yes.
that zone,
yeah.
yeah, in that talkative room, I better go out for a walk.
yeah. Or you do this work.
Yeah, yeah, moving.
Yeah,
moving.
Yes, moving.
Have you read Focusing by Eugene Gendlin?
No.
I'll just tell you very quickly. Eugene Gendlin was a psychologist who filmed psychotherapy sessions, and he noticed that the ones he could predict very efficiently who would get better from therapy. And how? Well, they had a felt sense of the words. So the patients who would have some sort of insight and think, oh, I was disappointed. Oh, right. And you know, see, I'm like doing this, sinking in my chair, going like, oh, and looking up in the corner of the room. And who, if you have these bodily senses of, you feel the word, you feel the word disappointed and what it does with you, or whatever word it was. The ones who had the capacity for feeling words, they were the ones who would get better from therapy. If you had ones like, okay, I was disappointed, if nothing happens, there would be no progress in therapy. Interesting, huh?
Yeah
it's yes. very connected to what you're doing. It's a strategy, a method of how to think about, you ask yourself, what is really, what's the all that of what I'm feeling right now? Often you have this sense that you're just, something's wrong, what is it? You know, I ask myself, because I've read this book now, something's wrong, what is it? Is it, and then I try, sort of, is it the situation with, is it that, how it was when I just met this person in the on the street? Is it the thing? Is it the And then I can sort of narrow it down. Oh, it's not that. It's not that. Oh, it's this one. So what's the all that about that situation? Oh, it's that I'm afraid. It's like I behaved as a victim. Yeah, that's what I don't like. Why did I do that? You know, or something like this. So it's the, that's where words are really unlocking, but the body is the where it's happening. You know. It's where you have to go to, always the body, because your body is the instrument for testing the truth. You know, you never do that with just arguments and premises and
no,
you know.
I don't think so.
Yeah. You feel if it's true or not. What do you think is the next? What happens now?
Now today.
What is now?
First of all, I really enjoyed going in conversation with you.
Yeah.
About this, and I'm actually very excited to continue.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
With you,
yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. And let's see. Like, let's do in 2 weeks or 1 month. Like enough time in between, so we life happens.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So let's see what. Yeah. Lovely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great. Yeah.
Mhm.
Yeah. Super interesting.
I didn't know what to expect before Patricia turned up. In fact, I don't have much of a plan at all with this entire project. I'm not sure what I'm aiming for, and I don't have a conclusion that I'm working to prove. As I'm saying these words now, I'm wondering, or I'm sensing, well, I just want to continue, and I hope you join us. If you want to comment or ask something, you can write to contact@philoprax.se, that's K-O-N-T-A-K-T, at philoprax.se. And in the meantime, feel free to browse through philoprax.se. There might be another podcast or article that you like. Till soon.